It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Conde. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. Merry Christmas to all of you that celebrate that. Wow, what another adventure in winter today. Thanks for joining us on the program. We got a good program coming your way. Coming up in our second hour this morning, we're going to pick up our discussion from yesterday down at the Colby Military Writers Symposium. We're going to be joined this morning by Philip Caputo, who wrote a really important book about Vietnam, really one of the first books that talked about what the combat experience was, a book called A Rumor of War. Later this hour, we're actually kind of going back in the time machine a little bit today. Coming up at 9:30 this morning, we're going to talk with an attorney, the lead counsel on the Church Committee. And if you're wondering what the Church Committee is, and if it has any relevance for today, this was a committee that was chaired by Senator Frank Church, who is a Democrat from Idaho, which found that there were abuses that were being done by the CIA looking into people's lives. Now, an interesting part of this story is that it also looked at the NSA, which was a, relatively speaking, new organization at the time. So the story from the past, again, relevant today. That's going to be coming up at 9:30. We're going to begin this morning and, again, go back into the time machine. This on the photographic time machine. Let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Ron Feirstein, who is the author of a new biography about Dr. Edwin Land, A Triumph of Genius, Edwin Land, Polaroid, and the Kodak Patent War. And Ron was part of the legal team that was involved in the Polaroid Kodak suit. Ron, thank you very much for joining us. How are you this morning?
I'm very well. Thank you, Mark, for having me.
Tell me a little bit about how did you get involved in the Kodak Polaroid suit?
Well, I was a young lawyer at a firm called Fish and Neve in New York that was representing Polaroid in a patent case against Kodak. It involved the SX70 technology, which most of your listeners would associate with the Polaroid camera that we all know, the one with the square photo image that was ejected from the camera right after you hit the shutter button, and it developed in your hands in front of you. And Polaroid came out with their system in 1972, and Kodak came out with a competing system in 1976, and it appeared to Polaroid technology people that Kodak had used some of Polaroid's patented technology, and therefore they sued for patent infringement. And I was privileged to be in the right place at the right time to work on the case.
And they ultimately won. I mean, Kodak had to cough up pretty close to $1 billion.
That's correct. $925 million to be exact, which actually was a record until about 3 or 4 weeks ago. So it was a record award of damages that stood for decades. But I think more significantly, we were able to get Kodak enjoined from further infringement, which translated into English means they had to take their cameras and film out of the stores, mm-hmm. immediately stop selling them. And so you actually had 13 million Americans left high and dry with Kodak instant cameras that could no for which they could no longer buy film.
Wow. Go back in time here, and let's talk about how this was all developed. I mean, Edwin Land was truly a brilliant man.
Well, that really was the impetus for writing the book, Mark. You know, through this lawsuit, I got to know about Dr. Land. In fact, I worked with him one-on-one during the case. And I have to confess that before I got involved in the case, I had owned a Polaroid camera, and I noticed that it said Polaroid Land camera. Mm-hmm. If you bought the film, it always said Polaroid Land film.
Right.
Well, until I got involved in the case, I thought Land referred to the ground. I thought, you know, they were distinguishing it somehow from an aerial camera or an underwater camera or something. Uh-huh. I had no idea it was a man. And then I obviously learned that Edwin Land was the father of this technology. It's not like he made every invention himself, but he marshaled it through. He was the founder of Polaroid. And the more I learned about him, the more amazed I became that here was one of the great technology entrepreneurs and inventors in American history, and no one has ever heard of him.
And you know,
I decided at that point he deserved to be more well known, and sort of put on my bucket list to someday write a book about him. And as part of that book, this Polaroid Kodak litigation was an important part in a historic chapter.
Are you serious? No one else has written a biography of Edwin Land before?
You know, there have been two or three books written, like back in the 80s, and but none of them really achieved any kind of distribution. And, the key was not so much what had been written before, but the fact that when I talk to people about my experience, you know, on the Polaroid case and working with Dr. Land, no one knew who he was. You know, just if you ask around, I mean, if you have 10 people in a room and ask them who Edwin Land was, I guarantee you no more than two or three might have ever heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously maybe in New England and closer you get to Boston, you know, the percentage goes up. But out there in the real world, most people had never heard of Edwin Land, and I know I hadn't. But he was an amazing guy. At 19, long before he got involved in photography, at the age of 19, he dropped out of Harvard. He actually dropped out at 17. But at the age of 19, he made a discovery that had eluded physicists for hundreds of years. And what he invented was the very thin piece of plastic that could polarize light, that could take the glare out of bright light. And this thin piece of plastic made possible your sunglasses, your polarizing camera filters. They're used in a million applications even today in your LCD TV screens. And this is something physicists had noticed, the phenomenon of polarization back in the 17th century. But the only materials they knew about that could do this were like large pieces of crystal. No one had come up with a practical material until Land did the late 20s, early 30s, and at the age of 19. And he built his company, Polaroid, on that technology.
Mm-hmm.
By the time he was 25, he had the equivalent of a $200 million company.
Mm-hmm. He didn't develop the Polaroid camera until after World War II, and he was actually quite helpful in World War II. Talk about that.
Well, it became apparent as the country was gearing up for war that this technology of taking glare out would be very useful in the military. In fact, in my book, I have a picture of General Patton next to a tank in Africa wearing a pair of Polaroid goggles, because Polaroid made, using this technology, all kinds of specialized goggles for pilots who had to land on aircraft carriers at night in the dark using only UV illumination, and tank commanders, and they made gun sights. They made 3D images of battle fields, including Normandy beaches. So Polaroid, you know, dedicated itself to the war effort, I think for the right reasons, although as a result, he did make a lot of money. But it was really quite an important phase in Land's development, because as a result of that, he sort of got pulled into a small group of scientists who were supporting the government war effort and then later the Cold War effort in conjunction with the CIA and other intelligence services. And Land played a very important role for seven American presidents in complete secret, you know, alongside the work in public he was doing in photography and polarized lenses.
Hmm. With the military, obviously.
With the military. He was responsible, you know, at the end of World War II, Truman left office and Dwight Eisenhower became our president. And Eisenhower, of course, had been a general in World War II and responsible for Normandy and so on. At this point, Land was in this small group that actually met with the president. He was on a scientific advisory panel, and Eisenhower told this panel, and Land in particular, I'm really nervous about the Russians. You know, I'm not sure what they're really up to. And Land said, well, why don't we go take a look? And out of that came the U-2 spy plane, which Land, you know, led a group that put that technology together. And as I believe that U-2 spy plane, that's high-altitude plane, is still in use today,
you know,
50 years later.
Right, wow.
60 years later.
We're talking with Ron Feuerstein, who's a biographer of Edwin Land, the great photographic and scientific genius. You can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. I love this idea that Edwin Land said that all the discoveries are out there. They're just waiting to be discovered, that things are not invented, but that they're found.
Yeah. He had a tremendous curiosity, and he had a tremendous amount of confidence that there was no problem that could not be solved. And I think he was famous for saying, if you can state a problem, then you can solve a problem. And he had the intellect, but he also had that drive and that just blind faith that if he applied himself and worked hard enough at something, he could break through and make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that time after time over the course of his career.
How did the camera, talk about the story behind the story and the discovery and why he was motivated to develop the instant camera?
Well, it's really a very charming story. World War II is coming to a close, and actually Land was concerned about the future of his company because he knew that this big business boon that they had enjoyed from the war was going to come to an end. And he wasn't. And although polarizer technology was important, and there were many applications for it, many products coming out of that, he wasn't sure it was enough to sustain the company, especially since the company had grown so much. And so he was, you know, sort of just he was looking for another direction and another product. And he was on vacation and went for a walk with his young daughter, who was about 5 or 6 or 7, and they were snapping away, taking pictures with a conventional Kodak camera, using, you know, regular film that had to be taken out of the camera and brought to a drugstore when you were done, and then the drugstore would ship it off to a lab where the film would be developed through a whole long series of steps, done in perfect temperature, at perfect timing, and so on and so forth. And then returned to you like 3 weeks later. Well, his daughter was having fun taking these pictures, and she started complaining to him, "Daddy, Daddy, I want to see the pictures now. You know, why do I have to wait?" And, you know, as they say in the prologue to my book, you know, other fathers would have just dismissed, you know, the complaints of a young child, but he embraced them, and it set off an intellectual exercise in his mind to come up with a camera and film system that could solve this problem and give you a print in your hands within minutes of snapping the shutter.
Mm-hmm. Can you?
That was 43. Yeah.
I'm
and
sorry.
The first one was on the market by 48.
Okay, and then they tried to sell 30 of them, and they sold out in like a couple of hours.
Well, they were concerned because it was so new and it was very expensive. The first camera sold for the equivalent of about almost $900.
Huh.
And the film was also expensive. So they weren't really sure how it was going to be received, but it became a rage very quickly.
Mm-hmm. And so at what point, so tell me again, when did Kodak try to get into this?
Well, this is the interesting thing, and one of the other main themes of the book. Polaroid and Kodak had an unbelievable relationship over 60 years. And it's almost apparatic in the sense that they were mentor and protege in the beginning and became arch enemies at the end.
Huh.
Kodak was Land's first customer for his polarizer plastic. They bought the equivalent of $100,000 of it in 1934, the first big customer he had, and they turned it, of course, into camera filters. But that started a relationship between Land and his company Polaroid and Kodak. And when Land started his research in photography, it was Kodak who gave him the chemicals and the other materials he needed for the research, even though they had no idea what he was up to. When he solved the problem, was ready to show them this system that he developed. Of course, it was Kodak who manufactured the negatives. And Kodak manufactured every Polaroid negative from the very beginning well into the 60s. And by the 60s, Polaroid was Kodak's second largest corporate customer. The only larger customer were the cigarette manufacturers for whom Kodak made the small plastic tubes they turned into cigarette filters.
Wow.
So it was an amazing relationship. They both were making a lot of money. Kodak was a mentor to Land. He had many friends within the company. And that was working perfectly until 1968, when Land showed them the prototype for SX-70, for this print that we all know, that square photograph with the big white border at the bottom. And what was different about that one, it was the first time that the picture would emerge from the camera and develop in front of you. You didn't have to time it. You didn't have to peel it apart. You didn't have to print the print with a chemical to stabilize it. All of those were steps that were involved in the early Polaroid systems. And when Kodak saw this new prototype, for the first time, they changed their thinking from Polaroid being just a niche curiosity kind of company to having a technology that might challenge its dominance of amateur photography.
Mm-hmm.
And Kodak got nervous, and Kodak said, listen, we'll help you with your new film, but only if you let us make some and sell it in our own yellow boxes and compete against you.
Right.
And Polaroid couldn't accept that. And when Kodak didn't back down, the two companies went their separate ways. And Kodak went off to come up with their own competing system. Polaroid went off to figure out how to manufacture its own negatives for the first time. And as I said earlier, by 1972, Polaroid came out with the SX70 system, and it took Kodak 4 years longer than that to come out with a competing system. And when they did, instead of leapfrogging Polaroid, which many at Polaroid, including Dr. Land, thought they might, instead of leapfrogging them in technology, they actually had to use some elements of Polaroid's patented technology, and that resulted in this lawsuit.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about Polaroid inventor Edwin Land. Let's go to Braintree. Gordon, good morning.
Good morning. I had something to say about Polaroid, because I worked for them for a couple of years back in the early 70s. And one is that was the best employer. Edwin Land was very good to his employees of all levels, and they employed a lot of people with all kinds of skill levels. And another is one of their inventions I didn't hear mentioned, but that we were presented, you know, a lot of the things that Polaroid proposed was to put polarizing filters in all car headlights and windshields so they'd all be polarized at the same 45-degree angle between vertical and horizontal so that when a car comes at you, its light is going through the cross 90-degree, the darkest part of the polarization, and so it would eliminate glare from headlights on oncoming vehicles.
Your listener is exactly right. In fact, that was the first application for the polarizing material that Land thought of back when he was a teenager, and it really is one of the disappointments of his career that he was never really able to sell that idea to the Detroit automobile industry.
I remember that.
They were selling a lot of cars anyway.
That's what they presented at us, and I thought, well, that's one of the best ideas. And even nowadays, I wish they had, because the headlights are so darn bright.
Yeah.
It's hard to drive at night.
Yeah.
And also, when I worked there, we were all aware that, you know, that Polaroid and Kodak were both kind of corporate enemies, and yet their biggest customers at the same time. It was sort of peculiar. If I could just say something in a Vermont business that reminded me of that. I worked for a short while at Ben & Jerry's in Springfield, Vermont. And they used to produce Häagen-Dazs ice cream bars there. And remember Häagen-Dazs and
Who's Afraid of the Doughboy.
The Pillsbury Doughboy. And there I was seeing, you know, when you work for companies, you see stuff on the inside that it's not what the public knows. But Polaroid was a good company, and I'm great to have this guest, and it's good to hear this.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
So, Ron, why do you think the Polaroid camera, I mean, it was popular, and there was sort of a peak at one point, but it never really did become the dominant technology. What did Edwin Land's theory on that? What was that?
Well, it was never the dominant technology because at the end of the day, although the photographs were beautiful and very high quality, and particularly in black and white, you'll talk to scientists who used it because it was so precise, really... compared to conventional photographs, it was hard to get the same quality because of the fact that you could really use better cameras. The SX70 camera is a fine camera. It's an SLR camera. But, there were some very high-quality lenses and cameras made for conventional photography. And with the great film that Kodak produced, you could really get higher quality prints and so on. And really the death knell of instant photography was not, as some people think, digital. What the death knell was one-hour processing.
Mm.
Where all of a sudden, in the 80s, you could get your prints in an hour, not the 3 weeks that, was the problem in the beginning.
Right.
And when that happened, well, then people said, well, you know, I can use my big fancy camera with the big fancy lenses and this tremendous Kodak film and get really high quality pictures in an hour. And that really started to erode the market. Of course, you know, digital came along and was maybe the final nail in the coffin.
Right.
But neither one of them gave you the instant gratification that Land was after, which was having the print in your hand, you know, just seconds or a minute after you press the shutter.
Maybe
that's why there's a bit of a resurgence of Polaroid today. You can buy a brand new Polaroid camera and film combination on today.
Yep, just recently bought one in our house. You can, for $100, you can have a field day. And there's actually sort of a smaller, more interesting version these days too. Pretty high quality. Talk about the relationship that the reverence that Steve Jobs had for Edwin Land.
Well, this is a very interesting aspect of it because Steve Jobs really idolized Land. You know, they had so many similarities. They were both college dropouts. They both built glamorous technology companies, and Steve, you know, Jobs copied many of Land's techniques. For example, everyone knows that Steve Jobs would announce new Apple products at their shareholders meetings every year.
Right.
And those events became, you know, very highly anticipated and widely covered. Well, Edwin Land was doing that in the 60s and 70s. He's the one who started doing that, and it was his technique. And even later when in 1972, when SX-70 came out, journalists asked Land, well, how much market research did you do before you committed, you know, $500,000 of your company's money to develop this camera and film?
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you make sure there was a market first? And Land said, well, we did no market research. It's not our job to give consumers what they think they want. It's our job to give them things they can't even imagine. Well, that might sound familiar to some of your listeners as something that Steve Jobs or other Apple executives would say. In fact, just a few weeks ago, I saw Tim Cook on TV talking about the Apple Watch, and he said that Apple's whole role in life is to give you something you didn't know you wanted.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, this is not a big secret. Jobs spoke about this all the time, that he revered Land. He met him a couple of times during his lifetime.
Right.
And he once said, you know, like going to Land's office was like going to a national shrine.
Wow.
So there's a great similarity and real inspiration that Land provided. I call Edwin Land the original Steve Jobs.
What was the case 3 weeks ago that outdid the reward that the settlement in the Kodak Polaroid case?
It was a case that had to do with some medical technology. Gore, the company Gore that makes Gore-Tex, you know, it's in a lot of our jackets and stuff. They also make some medical equipment, and one of the devices they made was they were accused of infringing the patent of another company that developed that material. And so that case was finally decided and appealed, and the final decision came down, and Gore had to pay just a smidge over $1 billion in damages.
Wow.
So it broke the record. But if you adjust the $925 million that Polaroid received, you know, back then for inflation, then it still doesn't come close.
Right, right. And that was you made a fortune off of that in your career too, right?
No, not me. I was just a soldier in the trenches, Mark. I made a nice salary as a lawyer, but I was a lawyer for an outside law firm, and we did not take that case on a contingency. In fact, I used to joke with my boss because I always thought we had a winning hand, and I said, "Well, why didn't you take this as a contingency? You would get a large piece of the award of the judgment." And he just laughed because that's not the way these large law firms work. They bill by the hour, and they make a nice, you know, amount of money on it. But it's not like any of us got rich from this lawsuit.
Right? Do you all get a camera at the end of the day or anything?
No, but I did get Dr. Land to autograph for me one of the patents that we won on, and that was one of his patents that we worked on. And I have that framed and proudly hanging in my office.
Do you think there's a really, it could be successfully, this man could be revived from the ashes of history?
Well, I'm trying, and the book has gotten a lot of good attention. I've had some really nice reviews. People who have read it, you know, just, in fact, reading the reader reviews on Amazon, you know, they're very complimentary. People are really pleasantly surprised to learn about this. And the more interviews like this I do, the more we spread the word. And actually, the fun thing is, believe it or not, I've actually sold the movie rights. So that there's some interest in the film community about bringing this to the screen. And, you know, that's obviously a long road that's fraught with pitfalls. Mm-hmm. But it's encouraging that there was even enough interest for someone to come and make a deal for it. And now we'll see where that goes.
The instant film. There's a concept, huh?
There you go. I don't think it'll be so instant, though.
Yeah.
It'll probably take a while.
Thank you for your time this morning, Ron. I appreciate it.
I appreciate your having me. You have a good day now.
You too. Ron Feierstein is the author of a new biography about Edwin Land, A Triumph of Genius, Edwin Land, Polaroid, and the Kodak Patent War. Ron, by the way, also has an abode up in the beautiful Lake Champlain Islands, so a little Vermont connection there for you. Quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Church Committee. That was a Senate committee, which looked into government abuses, and we'll do that right after this.
Be a part of the G-Stone Motors team. G-Stone has been a family business for over 40 years and is looking to add members to their family. They're now hiring a parts manager, service technicians, and a salesperson. These are all full-time positions. Parts manager and service technicians must possess excellent communication skills and knowledge of the industry. This is a high-paced, professional environment that services thousands of friendly faces in the area. The salesperson must be energetic, have a strong work ethic with the goal to succeed. This is not a job. This is a career with great potential to make great money. They will train the right person, but experience is preferred. G-Stone Motors offers competitive salary, holiday pay, vacation, and 401k. If you or anyone you know is looking for full-time employment and think this would be a good fit, please visit G-Stone Motors on Route 7 in Middlebury and inquire within. They are now hiring a full-time parts manager, full-time service technicians, and full-time salesperson. Please visit G-Stone Motors in Middlebury for more information and to apply.
Since 1972, Vermont Business Magazine has been Vermont's trusted business partner. The source, the scoop, the advantage. For over four decades, Vermont Business has been all these things and more to business people throughout Vermont and beyond. Vermont Business Magazine is the source of the latest business news, provides the scoop on who's doing what around the state and what that means for your business, and gives you the data and analysis that give you the advantage you need in tough times and good. Just the quality you want most in a business partner. With multi-platform offerings, from our magazine to events to online features and updates, Vermont Business is the place to do business. Whether you're looking to reach your prospective customers through targeted advertising or to find the data and information that gives your business the vital edge, Vermont Business Magazine. For over 40 years, just what you're looking for in a business partner. For a subscription, call 802-863-8038 or go to vermontbiz.com and let's do business.
It's no secret, Mihuron Supermarket is a great place to shop. I'm Tom Mihuron. For over seven